And that concludes our show. That was Yard Act with the 8-minute version of the Trenchcoat Museum. Man, that song's awesome. Before that, the Chemical Brothers with Live Again, and Claude with A Good Thing. And yeah, that wraps up the show for this week. I played my favorite tracks from 2023. And stick around for Courts in Session. I will be back next year in January playing more new music for you. And yeah, just have a great year, everybody. Bye.
Welcome, everybody. The first vote of the 2024 Republican primary is now in the books. It is officially primary election season. And a Florida man with 91 felony counts against him, who was also recently determined to be a civilly liable rapist, won the Iowa caucus. I'm referring, of course, to the former president, Donald Trump. We are going to look at the results. We will talk about whether is there any even hypothetical path to anyone other than Trump winning this nomination for the Republican Party? What is the deal with Nikki Haley? What's going on with Ron DeSantis? Vivek Ramaswamy immediately dropping out. So let's take it in the only way that I believe makes sense, step by step, starting with the results from last night. Donald Trump was polling in the mid-50s heading into yesterday's Iowa caucus. Donald Trump did win, with slightly less support than what was indicated in the polls. Trump with 51% of the vote, all of the other candidates sharing 49% of the vote. And that'll be relevant to my forthcoming analysis 45 seconds from now. Ron DeSantis ultimately ending up in second place, but barely, just barely, about 2 points ahead of Nikki Haley. So again, we zoom it out. You've got Trump 51, DeSantis 21, Nikki Haley 19. You may recall that Vivek Ramaswamy, with complete and total confidence, said he would win Iowa. He came in fourth with 7.7%. Now, to his credit, he was only polling, I think, 5. So Vivek Ramaswamy over performing. Ryan Binkley, who I had never heard of until yesterday, actually came in ahead of Asa Hutchinson and Chris Christie. Chris Christie ending up with 35, not 35% of the vote, not 3.5% of the vote, but 35 votes for Chris Christie, the sanest candidate by far, doing absolutely the worst. So let me give you a couple of perspectives that have been floated and tell you why they maybe aren't super hot. First perspective is, listen, this is a bad sign for Trump if the Republicans could get their act together. Why? Well, look, Trump only got 51% of the vote. That means that 49% of the voters wanted someone else, meaning that essentially this is 50-50 between pro-Trump and anti-Trump. Now, that might sound interesting. That might sound accurate. That might sound appealing. But what you have to understand is that if all of these other people get out, a bunch of their support goes to Trump. Let me explain what I mean by that. If you look at DeSantis and Nikki Haley, together, they have what we might call 40% of the vote. But the problem is, if DeSantis gets out, a bunch of his support goes to Trump. How do we know that? Because that's what voters have said in the polls. They've been asked, OK, DeSantis supporters, who's your second choice? Where do you go if DeSantis is out? They don't go to Nikki. They go to Trump. Similarly, with Nikki Haley, I think it was 60% of Nikki Haley supporters said, if Haley doesn't win, I'm going Trump. So although in some sense, you look at these numbers and you go half, it's 50-50, half wants Trump, half doesn't. Everybody else should get out and unite behind whoever. It doesn't work that way, because as these candidates get out, a significant portion of their support actually goes to Donald Trump. Now, second place was also very important for Ron DeSantis, because there were rumors floating around that if DeSantis doesn't manage to get second place in Iowa yesterday, and if indeed Nikki Haley gets second place, that that's the end of the line for DeSantis, and DeSantis is getting out, especially when you consider DeSantis started at 30. in the polling and has ended up much lower nationally. Nikki Haley started at 1 nationally and is all the way up to 11 where she is now. If Nikki Haley comes in ahead of DeSantis, the rumor was DeSantis is out. Well, he lives to fight another day. Both Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis acting as if they won last night. They very much did not. One other note about this. Trump almost certainly will win this primary unless he ends up dead. I mean, quite literally, I can't think of anything that would prevent Trump from being the nominee unless he's not alive. But one important historical note is that Iowa is rarely declarative or predictive of who is the Republican nominee. In 2008, Huckabee, not Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Mike Huckabee, won Iowa. He was not the nominee. It was John McCain. In 2012, Rick Santorum, a name that many of our young viewers probably don't even recognize. Rick Santorum won the 2012 Iowa caucus. The nominee ultimately was Willard Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts. And in 2016, it was Ted Cruz, even though Trump forgot and claimed that he won Iowa in 2016. You'll see that later. Ted Cruz actually won Iowa in 2016. None of these winners were, they're sort of losers, but winners. None of those winners ultimately were their party's nominee. So keep that in mind. But the guy with the 91 felony charges winning last night, Donald Trump coming out to speak to a sycophant crowd after it was announced that he won the Iowa caucus. It didn't take long for that announcement to be made. I want to say it took 20 minutes before the Associated Press and other elements of news announced that they were able to call it for Trump. And Donald Trump came out sort of sarcastically and said, you know, I hope Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis are having fun fighting each other. Here is Trump at his victory speech last night.
I want to congratulate Ron and Nikki for having a good time together. We're all having a good time together. And I think they both actually did very well. I really do. I think they both did very well. We don't even know what the outcome of second place is.
Yeah. At this point, Haley and DeSantis were very tight. Ultimately, Ron DeSantis coming in second place and arguably saving his primary race, at least for now. Donald Trump, unable to tell the truth, even during a simple I won speech, wrongly claiming that this is the third time that he won the Iowa primary.
So I want to just finish by saying that this has been an incredible experience. The people have been, this is the third time we've won, but this is the biggest win.
That is very much untrue. In fact, Trump kind of has never really won Iowa before this time. And I'll explain. In 2016, Ted Cruz won, like he just straight up won. Ted Cruz won the 2016 Iowa caucus. Trump is wrong. In 2020, there really wasn't a primary, much the same way that in 2024, Democrats aren't running a real primary because Biden is the incumbent. In 2020, Republicans didn't run a real primary because Trump was the incumbent. So to say Trump won Iowa in 2020 ignores the fact that he was essentially unopposed. So when Trump says, I won three times, he's really won it once, if you actually want to talk about winning a contested Iowa. Truth doesn't matter, I know, but just, you know, my effort to correct it. And then lastly, Donald Trump continuing this very gross attack on Joe Biden by saying Jimmy Carter is happy about Joe Biden because it means Jimmy Carter is no longer the worst president ever. He keeps telling this joke. It's not a good joke.
And you know, my wife attended the funeral 2 months ago of Rosalynn Carter, and it was beautiful. And Jimmy Carter was there. And I thought to myself, Jimmy Carter is happy now because he will.
Not because his wife died, guys. The funeral mention is not related. Listen to the explanation here.
Go down as being a brilliant president by comparison to Joe Biden. He'll be a brilliant president. He's going to be known as brilliant.
All right. So there is Donald Trump repeating that vile line once again. Trump, not exactly gracious in victory, but sort of with this faux conciliatory tone, which talks about how now we're going to come together. Now that Trump won the caucus and he will likely win the primary. The country will come together and understand that for an authoritarian dictator wannabe like Trump, what he means by now that I won, we are going to come together is now that I won, everybody damn well better acquiesce and get behind me and become loyal in the way that Trump defines loyalty, or I will target you for retribution. That's what Trump means by unity. So Trump speaking after winning, Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley also spoke after losing, but you wouldn't know they lost from looking at their speeches. Let's talk about that a little bit. Ron DeSantis is not known for charisma, and he is certainly not known to be a good public speaker. He is not high energy, but he gave a very interesting speech last night after losing the Iowa caucus. Remember, DeSantis did not win. He gave a speech around 10:30 Central Time there in Iowa, where he acted as though they did it. And he used the term that they got their ticket punched out of Iowa. Everything about how this guy speaks is just so cringy. And DeSantis seems to be declaring victory, even though he lost. It's really weird. Take a listen to this.
Thank you. Thanks so much. They threw everything but the kitchen sink at us.
Yeah.
We love you, too. They threw everything but the kitchen sink at us. They spent almost $50 million attacking us. No one's faced that much all the way just through Iowa. The media was against us. They were writing our obituary months ago.
I mean, it'll probably be written next week. It'll probably be published next week, so it's not that early.
They even called the election before people even got a chance to vote.
Right.
But they were just so excited about the fact that they were predicting that we wouldn't be able to get our ticket punched here out of Iowa. But I can tell you, because of your support, in spite of all of that that they threw at us, everyone against us, we've got our ticket punched out of Iowa.
I guess what he's saying is, my performance wasn't so humiliating. I didn't lose the solid second place status by so much that I had months ago. I am able to continue to next week's primary in New Hampshire. I guess that's what he means by he got his ticket punched out of Iowa. And similarly, Nikki Haley said it's now a two-person race, the primary. I'm not gathering that from the numbers either. It seems like it's Trump and then Nikki and Ron fighting for second place. And by the way, Nikki Haley didn't even come in second place. So I don't know which two people she's thinking about.
I can safely say tonight, Iowa made this Republican primary a two-person race.
Which two people? I really don't understand which two people she's thinking of. Very, very strange. But, you know, I guess they have their talking point. They're not going to deviate from it. DeSantis giving a speech that would be indicative of at least a strong second place, except he barely beat Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley giving a speech indicative of her being in a strong second place with DeSantis behind her. That's also not true. So it's all very weird and pre-planned speeches. I guess once you write the speech, you stick to it, even if the election results don't coincide. So there it is. We heard the results. We heard from the top three finishers. It was not a good night for Vivek Ramaswamy. We will take a very short break and then discuss his future or lack thereof in a moment. Remember that as we enter now and we dig deeper and deeper into the 2024 election, the David Pakman Show does continue to primarily be supported by our audience, people who listen to the podcast or listen on the radio, watch on Free Speech TV, watch on YouTube, check out TikToks or whatever the case may be. You can sign up and get a membership at joinpakman.com. I have to tell you, there's no weird bonuses to being a member. You just get more of the show and you get it commercial free. and you get invited to our members only town hall events. I don't have any drinkable silver to offer you or anything like that. I know some other shows may have that. You can sign up at joinpacman.com and you can use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24 to save, I think it's about 60 or 65%. It's a beautiful coupon code that I can tell you. SAVEDEMOCRACY24 at joinpacman.com. Vivek Ramaswamy predicted he would win the Iowa Republican caucus last night. He did not. He came in fourth place and he immediately ended his campaign. You know, I don't think I will ever forget where I was when I heard that Vivek Ramaswamy was dropping out of this race. It is going to be, it's just one of those moments you'll know forever exactly where you were when you saw him make this announcement.
The first hard truth, and this one's hard for me, I gotta admit this, but we've looked at it every which way, and I think it is true that we did not achieve the surprise that we wanted to deliver tonight. And
I always find it funny when, you know, we've run the numbers every way we can. And it's like, I don't know, I was in fourth place and I'm only polling 4% and I have no path to winning any state. It has now become clear that I have no path forward. Dude, I told you that when I first interviewed you months ago. So it becomes one of these things where it's like, do you have to just suspend disbelief in order to run? Because we all know that you've got no shot looking at the polling. Or did you genuinely not realize that before, which would be weird because he has access to all the same data we have. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Here he is telling us the future of his campaign.
I think that that's just a hard fact that we're going to have to accept as a campaign. And the question then is, what do we do that is right for our country?
Right.
And so Corb and I, we actually didn't make this contingency plan before everybody told us to. We said, no, we're not doing that.
It never occurred to me to think, what will I do if I come in fourth the way the polling says I will? I never even thought about it until 5 minutes ago.
But we talked about it tonight. We took a little bit of time in our apartment in Des Moines before coming here to make some hard choices. And I wanted to make a couple of announcements tonight to get the business out of the way.
Uh-oh.
And then I want to tell you where we're going. As of this moment, we are going to suspend this presidential campaign. And this is going to have to be, there's no path for me to be the next president absent things that we don't want to see happen in this country.
Right. I guess Trump being jailed or killed or something. I don't know. I don't even know what he's thinking of.
And I think that I am very worried for our country.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we are skating on thin ice as a nation. We have done everything in our part to make, and done, every one of us in this room has done our part to save this country. And I am so proud of every one of you who have lifted us up, but we're a campaign founded on the truth. And so that's why we've made that decision today. And I'm also making the decision that this has to be an America First candidate in that White House. As I've said since the beginning, there are two America First candidates in this race. And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulate him on his victory. And now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the president.
I love the lady screaming, don't do it. That is just perfect. Don't do it. No, don't do it.
Presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
That woman did not like what was going on here. So listen, this comes as a surprise to absolutely no one. It is now going to be a fight between Trump, DeSantis, and Nikki Haley. It seems to me that if DeSantis performs as poorly as he is expected to in New Hampshire, he may also be gone quite soon. And my prediction on Vivek, I actually thought he would make it into February. I thought his campaign would last into February. I was wrong. He underperformed even my low expectations. So Vivek out endorses Trump. No surprise to anybody. Hey, this you have to see. The party supposedly concerned with voter integrity was perfectly happy to be voting into paper bags yesterday during the Iowa caucus. You really can't write this stuff. They have spent years now talking about the integrity of the vote. There may have been suspicious bamboo fibers on some ballots in Arizona, which we need to have forensically investigated. And was there barbecue sauce? Was there a form of curry paste that is not really native to where the ballot supposedly came from? It's all crazy. The machines can't be trusted. And there were sandwiches delivered not commensurate with the number of poll workers and massive dumps. Here's video from last night of people at the Iowa caucus voting into paper bags that appear to be from the local grocery store, and everything is just completely fine. And there's no Mike Pillow screaming about the cyber guys and how everything is completely wrong with what's going on here. This is, you know, it starts to become a little difficult to believe that they really are able to enforce. No one is sneaking back around in line and throwing another ballot in the paper bag. Here's an image of a whiteboard that they have where they are tallying votes, and they're tallying them in multiple different colored markers, which is like just a basic thing would be all one. You only use one type of writing instrument on these basic stuff, where if we're even going the whiteboard route, you should at least control that there is only one color and type of marker, at least two, if not three different types of markers and writing implements being used here. So, you know, the people claiming to be so concerned about voter fraud, it's so difficult to believe that this is a serious concern when it's a problem if Biden won. And in this case, we'll raise all sorts of ethereal and obscure concerns about every element of this, despite having no evidence for it. And then meanwhile, everybody's perfectly happy to just put their slips of paper in a grocery store bag from next door. These are not serious people. And I know that people will say, David, you know, it's the caucus is different. This is the way they've done it all along. That's fine. I'm happy for them to do it that way if that's the way they want to do it. But for them to then argue that everything was done wrong in 2020 because their person lost, while believing that there aren't equivalent criticisms of this system, is the sort of pathetic double standard that I don't think any of us are surprised by. So Iowa Republicans voting into paper bags while they continue to be suspicious about some of the tallies from 2020, despite finding no evidence whatsoever that Joe Biden's win was anything but completely legitimate. A few Iowa supporters of Donald Trump were interviewed yesterday as the minutes tick down to the Iowa caucus. Of course, Donald Trump ultimately winning yesterday in Iowa, although not by as big a margin as the polling suggested, Trump finishing up with about 51%. Here are just some of these surreal videos where you ask yourself, what are these people talking about? Very strange noises and different things happening on the computer. Here is this is from Iowa. This is a Right Side Broadcasting interviewer speaking to a voter and reminding all of us of all of the illegal things that Donald Trump exposed, which I don't remember that at all.
I think that Donald Trump has released so much information and really opened the eyes of Americans and uncovered all of the illegal activities that were going on and just what? Really opened our eyes to the truth.
You know, the only illegal activities that I can think of that Donald Trump exposed or told us about are his own. I'm struggling to remember any other illegal activities that Trump has enlightened us about. And then here is a guy talking, or a woman rather, a person talking about their special caucus captain hat, which they were able to get signed by cult members Eric and Don Jr. and Ben Carson as well.
Caucus captain and with his signature.
Yes, and I have Eric's signature. I have Donald Jr.'s signature, Dr. Ben Carson's signature on my hat. Yeah. I have Trump's signature on other things, but I don't have it on my caucus hat, but I aim to get it.
I think with your personality and your work ethic, you're well on your way.
Thank you.
They now seem to actually have ranks. It's becoming much more of an organized cult. The white hat, of course, being a Trump caucus captain, is higher ranked than, for example, maybe the front row Joes, the guys who travel the country going to Trump's rallies. They are really in a move reminiscent of Scientology. They're creating a whole infrastructure of ranks and responsibilities and jobs, etc. So listen, when you look at a state like Iowa, you see the high evangelical community and even the evangelicals mostly supporting Trump, as the entry polling data suggested yesterday, widely reported data. When even the evangelicals mostly support Trump, who couldn't be, can you think of anyone less representative of what evangelicalism claims to be? Now, what it actually is a different conversation we can have. But from their stated values, it's very hard to think of anyone less representative of those values than Trump. And yet he got more than 50% of their support. Extraordinarily disturbing and concerning stuff. But you go to the election with the opposition you have, not the opposition you wished you had. And these are the folks we're going to have to figure out a way to defeat in November. We'll take a quick break. We are going to look at the very disturbing new poll numbers for Trump versus Biden. I saw the poll. We're going to discuss it. I'm not pretending it doesn't exist. That's after this short break. Many in the audience writing to me over the weekend about a genuinely disturbing new poll which shows Biden losing to everyone in the Republican primary in a hypothetical November general election. Some predicting I would ignore the poll. Why would I do that? It's never something I do. Let's discuss the poll. CBS or ABC News article, rather, Trump tops his opponents while Biden hits a new low in approval ahead of Iowa caucus. This was from over the weekend before yesterday's caucus. The numbers are problematic. The numbers are absolutely problematic. The 2024 primary season begins with Trump ahead of his Republican opponents in key measures, while Joe Biden's job approval rating at a new low for any president in the last 15 years. This is an ABC News Ipsos poll. When you are looking at the data, you find that 72% of Republican aligned adults would be satisfied with Trump. Doesn't mean they're going to vote for him, but would be satisfied. That's the highest of any of the candidates. And considerably fewer Democrats are satisfied with Biden. Only 57% of Democrats and Democratic leaning independents are satisfied or would be satisfied with Joe Biden as the party's nominee. This is not particularly good information for Joe Biden, but maybe just as concerning, we have a YouGov CBS News poll in which Biden is losing to Nikki Haley by a brutal 8, losing to DeSanctimonious by 3, and losing to Trump by 2 in a general election hypothetical poll. If we look at other recent polls, you have Biden, Trump, even in a YouGov Economist poll. Hilariously, a good poll for Biden, given its typical rightward lean, is the Rasmussen Resorts Reports poll, where he's beating Haley, except he's losing to DeSantis and losing to Trump by a huge margin. And then in the latest Ipsos Reuters poll, in a head-to-head matchup, Biden and Trump are tied. And in a three-way race, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Trump is ahead by 1 point. These are very bad numbers for President Joe Biden. And there is nothing, you know, I don't know when to interject this. I wanted to mention this today, and there's no perfect time, but I think now is as good a time as any. You know, after my live coverage last night of the Iowa caucus where Trump won, I got a bunch of emails from people saying, sorry, David, Trump is going to win MAGA 2024, this sort of thing, relating to me personally. This has nothing to do with me. And it's really important to understand, I have almost zero influence over this election. I don't want to say zero, like I have a show and I know that there are some people who called in and said, hey, you know what? I was going to vote third party, but I'm going to vote Biden because I understand the risk. Or I was going to stay home and I'm going to go vote Biden because I understand the risk. You're not hurting. If Trump wins, I'm not really the person who gets hurt, right? I mean, I live in a blue state and a lot of the crazy stuff that President Trump would do will affect me way less living in a blue state. My financial situation is fine. I'm completely stable financially. And unless Trump tries to come take my money, I'm going to be fine. Right. You're not really getting one over on me. If Trump wins, it's not for my benefit that I want Joe Biden to win. It's for the benefit of the country. I think it would be better for the country if Biden wins. So the people who write to me and go, David, have you seen these polls? Your guy's going to lose. Ha ha ha. This isn't about me. I'm not the one who wields the influence, and I'm not the one who's going to be overwhelmingly affected here. It's going to be a disaster for what this country is supposedly founded on. The people writing to me will suffer at least as much, if not more, than I will. So this isn't a personal thing. Now, putting all of that out of the way, I don't know if and when the time to panic arrives. With some of these polls in which Biden is losing, there's 10, 12, 15% of the electorate that hasn't yet made up their mind. That alone could determine the outcome of the election, and it wouldn't yet be reflected in the polling. Is it simply too early? You know, in September, it was too early for the polls to mean anything. We're now halfway through January. The polls start to have meaning here. Now, I still am of the mindset that if you zoom out and you look at the economy, presidents tend to get reelected when the economy looks this way. But the right is doing a very good job of propagandizing voters into thinking the economy isn't good. And it is absolutely the case. I'm saying it now and I've been saying it. Trump could be president again. Trump could win again. It is not a guarantee in any way that Joe Biden wins this thing. We need to be taking the polling increasingly seriously as we get closer. Now, once Trump is officially the nominee, which I believe is going to happen, and once Biden is officially the nominee, which I believe is going to happen, and once Trump's criminal trials start, we have to see how the polling shifts and changes. But it is absolutely beyond reproach to say the polling doesn't look good for Biden. We can find reasons and excuses to say, well, here's one reason why it's not yet reflective of what's going to happen, so on and so forth. But this is the time of year when the polling starts to reflect the likely reality in November. We should all be scared, but it's not about me. I have no personal desire to, quote, be right. I haven't predicted that no matter what, Joe Biden wins this thing. I am generally of the mindset that if the economy remains good, he should be reelected by historical standards. But this is not an election the likes of which we have ever seen. Donald Trump delivered an absolutely sick final rally to Iowa voters before last night's Iowa caucus, which he absolutely won, although by a slightly smaller margin than the polling predicted. Donald Trump was worried about turnout because it's been so cold in Iowa, saying, even if you are sick as a dog, you've got to go out and vote for me. You've got to do it. Even if you go out and die, please vote.
So if you want to save America from crooked Joe Biden, you must go caucus tomorrow. The first step. We got to do it. We got to do it big. You got to get out. You can't sit home. If you're sick as a dog, you say, darling, I've got to make it. Even if you vote and then pass away, it's worth it. If you're sick, if you're just so sick, you can't, darn it, I don't think, get up. You get up, you vote. Yes, darling. Ultimately, we know who calls the shots, right? Right, Polly?
Right.
So you be safe and all. You're going to be safe. And again, all indoors. It's going to be all indoors. But you got to get up. You got to vote.
There you go. Even if it leads to your death, get out there and vote for me. Remember, when people are useful to Trump, he becomes very nice to them. Trump revitalizing an old cognitive beauty that even to buy groceries, one needs ID.
You know, you have ID for everything, right? You go to the grocery store, you have ID. No matter what you do, you have ID, except for voting, which is your most important thing. No voter ID.
Trump still seems convinced that if you go and buy Cheerios the hipster equivalent of it, you're asked for ID. Do we have any idea why Trump keeps repeating this? Does Trump have in mind that if you pull out a paper check, which, by the way, I haven't seen someone do at the grocery store for a very long time. Is Trump thinking of, you know, if you pull out a paper check, they ask to see ID? I don't know why he insists you need ID to buy groceries, but he does. Trump also saying that they are going to pray not just to God. They are going to pray for God.
We will pray for God and we will be with God. As we are one movement, one people, one family.
You know, I have to tell you, if God is needing Trump's prayers, I'd be worried about God. And then lastly, Trump alluding to his authoritarian dictatorial fantasies by talking about being president again for 4 years and beyond. Wait a second. That doesn't sound constitutional.
But nobody had to call me because I made the commitment and we kept you first in the nation. As long as I have anything to say about it, and that we have a good chance of saying for 4 years, we'll have a lot to say about it, 4 years and beyond.
4 years and beyond. And interviews with Trump supporters increasingly have them saying, given the choice between Biden reelected democratically and a Trump dictatorship, increasingly I'm seeing interviews with these Trumpists saying, now, sometimes you just need a dictator. We'll see if we can assemble some of those clips, maybe for tomorrow or for the next day. So an absolutely sick final plea to Iowa voters, but they listened, crowning Trump the winner of the first Iowa caucus. There was one funny moment that I do want to mention just briefly. Trump was heckled in Iowa. This was in Indianola, Iowa, over the weekend, just before the Iowa caucuses. I don't know why I find this so damn funny. 99.9% of the things Trump does, I find deplorable and disgusting. The way Trump deals with this apparently young protester, I actually find endlessly funny. I don't know what it is about it, but take a listen to this.
Thank you, darling. Thank you. Thank you. That's all right. Go home to mommy. Your mommy's worried. Go home to mommy. Thank you very much. So young. It's amazing because that used to happen all of the time. And I don't think it's happened in 2.5 or 3 years.
All right. And a heckler being escorted out while holding a sign and yelling climate criminal about Donald Trump. Not incorrect. All right. Let's analyze. What is it about go home to mommy? That is, I think what is funny about it is Trump genuinely doesn't get rattled and just doesn't care. Part of it is he is so narcissistic and so self-centered that what difference does it make if someone actually protests? But there is something about go home to mommy. I don't know. Let me know what you think about the way Trump handled that. Not exactly Obama-esque. Hold on. Let's hear what they have to say, right? Obama handles it in a different way. But Trump just doesn't care. And the way in which he doesn't care, part of his personality disorder, but endlessly funny. Let me know your thoughts. We'll take a quick break. So much more coming up on the program today. All right, let's continue getting caught up about the last 24 hours in Iowa and over the long weekend. A number of different things happened. Here's a very funny one that I wanted to bring to you. Our friends, the Good Liars, Davram and Jason, do all sorts of different funny and hilarious things in the political space. Davram actually showed up at a Ron DeSantis rally in Iowa over the weekend, somehow got himself to the front of the room and handed Ron DeSantis a participation trophy, saying, listen, you're not going to win, but here's a trophy for participating and you're a snowflake. DeSantis, you will notice DeSantis and his wife, Casey DeSantis, they initially like it. They initially think this is a nice thing. There's a moment where it just flips and Casey DeSantis notices it before Ron DeSantis, that this is a troll. This is a heckler. And then she actually steps in between our friend Davram and DeSantis and starts pushing him away. Then the security people come in and escort Davram out. I don't know how they always get themselves into these situations, but it is just perfectly executed. Check this out.
Nothing's going to stop us.
Real quick, before we get started, thank you, everyone. Governor DeSantis, I want to present to you this participation trophy. Now, probably not going to win the election, right? But we're proud of you for trying.
I participation trophy. Sorry, buddy.
He's special, he's unique, and he's our little snowflake.
And then he is pushed out sort of politely. And the timing is just absolutely perfect. The fact that DeSantis is still, you know, DeSantis is like, they're giving me an award. This sounds absolutely great. Even after calling it a participation trophy, Casey DeSantis still laughs and thinks that this is a real thing, but then realizes it actually isn't quite so good. Excellent, excellent job. And the look on DeSantis's face really worth its weight in gold, I guess I would say. All right, let's transition to something a little more serious now. There was a very interesting article written in Vanity Fair by former guest on the show. He was on with us last month, Brian Stelter. Brian Stelter wrote an article for Vanity Fair a couple days ago called "Where is the Party Heading? Inside the Populist Awakening of Bernie, Warren, and AOC." Now, I encourage you to read the article. This segment is not about the article, but the segment is about the question, what is the future of the progressive left in the United States? So I want to talk through what it appeared like maybe it was going to be, which I think has actually changed dramatically. There was a point in time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, where it seemed as though the future of the progressive left in the United States was going to go through people like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, it is absolutely the case that those three have been central to the progressive movement in recent years. But there is growing sentiment that it actually may have a very different future, the progressive movement of the United States. What are the issues? What, first of all, we should say, what about Bernie, Warren, and AOC? Well, Warren, the progressive left has increasingly abandoned as not actually being progressive. There are many in the progressive left who have said, hey, you know what? She's not actually a progressive. She's a corporate Dem or whatever the case may be. The fact is that Elizabeth Warren, by voting record, is one of the most progressive members of the U.S. Senate. I think second only to Bernie, if I recall correctly. She, with her wealth tax proposal, that is a policy that is well to the left of most other Democratic senators currently. So I think there is a very good factual case for Warren being one of the more progressive members of the Senate. But she is perceived by many on the progressive left as not actually being progressive enough. Bernie Sanders has increasingly taken heat from the progressive left for a number of different reasons. His support of Biden has led to many on the progressive left saying Bernie sold out. As I've said before, he sold out. He's in his 80s. He's financially independent. He can retire anytime. Why on earth would now be the time to sell out? The way I see it, Bernie has just called it the way he sees it for 40 years. But there are some who believe Bernie has sold out by endorsing Joe Biden. There are some who are upset with Bernie recently with regards to Israel-Gaza, with Bernie saying, how do you do a ceasefire with Hamas when Hamas openly says we are going to keep trying to do these sorts of terrorist attacks? So some on the progressive left are angry with Bernie there as well. And then generationally, it's hard to imagine that a guy in his 80s and a woman in her 70s are the next generation of progressive leaders. That's not ageism. It's just mathematics. They're the same age, essentially, as Joe Biden. So how are they the next generation? OK, what about AOC? AOC also has suffered a bit from the she sold out sort of thing. AOC over the last 18-ish to 24 months has become significantly more pragmatic and realistic about the way politics works in the United States. This comes to AOC losing some of the enthusiasm for some of these symbolic votes that some on the progressive left like and push for. And there are some who say, oh, AOC has sold out. AOC on some votes where she has voted present rather than voting one way or the other has garnered claims from some on the progressive left that she is now part of the establishment or whatever. And to be perfectly frank, AOC's likability or approval rating has also suffered significantly. She's getting significantly less media attention. So again, it's tough to believe that AOC is the future of the progressive movement when she also has become quite polarizing, only modestly effective in her role in the House of Representatives, and has received ire from people both on the progressive left disaffected with her and those who believe that she's too much part of the woke wing and not the future of the party. OK, so if not Bernie, Warren and AOC, three individuals where several years ago it seemed that is the direction that the progressive left was going, what is the future of the progressive left? Well, I don't really know. But the names that you find when you look at op-eds from people who are in this business, and I'm going to say a bunch of names, not necessarily because these are the people I want representing the progressive left, but because these are the names that are coming up most frequently. And I know that many in the audience will say, David, how can they represent the progressive left? They're not even progressive. Okay. The list that is often being floated, this is the list. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, which will make many in the audience absolutely cringe. Some who believe that he's just a loser, others who believe he's not actually progressive, others who believe he has, quote, ruined California. But Gavin Newsom is a name that is mentioned. Jamie Raskin, who's been on this program, is a name that is mentioned. Counterpoint to Jamie Raskin is he really part of the next generation? Well, yeah, compared to 80-year-olds, he is. Is he progressive enough? I think if you look into the track record of Jamie Raskin, which we looked at deeply before he appeared on the show, you find a true progressive community organizer who is also skilled at politics. Jamie Raskin is a name that's mentioned. But is he really going to be the leader of the progressive movement? I don't know. Some are talking about Richie Torres from New York, member of Congress. Many in the audience will say he is not nearly anti-Israeli enough, so he can't be the leader of the progressive movement. Stacey Abrams from Georgia is a name that often comes up. The counterpoint with Stacey Abrams from many is when you've lost this many times, it's hard to become the leader of a movement. John Ossoff, young Democratic senator from Georgia, mentioned also by many. And there are other emerging and influential voices. This is not the entire list. But what I want to bring to you today is there has clearly been a shift. We've seen the perceived future and the changing priorities of the Democratic electorate, in my view, no longer point to Bernie, Warren, AOC. Who do you believe is the future of the progressive movement? And my priority is I don't have to agree with them on everything, but they need to strike the right tone when it comes to dealing with a Republican Party that has been decimated by ignorance, obstructionists, people you can't work with, people you need to get around rather than work with to get anything done. Who do you see as the future of the progressive movement? And if you look at it and you see Bernie, Warren, and or AOC, by all means, I want to hear from you. Let me know. Ben Carson, who is not exactly an electric speaker, was interviewed in advance of the Iowa caucus by Fox News's Neil Cavuto and bizarrely compares Donald Trump to King David, and host Neil Cavuto. Even Neil Cavuto is visibly shocked by this. Now, for those who have not heard Carson speak ever or recently, understand that he is not exactly an electric speaker. He's not the type of guy who will get you fired up for really anything, okay? So just bear that in mind.
Well, you know, you think about the Bible and King David. Most of those people probably, if they were alive back in those days, would have said, oh, what a horrible guy. You know, the episode with Bathsheba and some of the other things that he did. And yet he was a man after God's own heart. God uses different people for different times. You need somebody with a Manhattan business type of personality to deal with the administrative state. You know, there are some real wolves in that Manhattan business environment. And to succeed in that, you don't just kind of be a flowery, nice person necessarily. No. That doesn't mean he can't be. I've seen him. When he's not being attacked, he's a wonderful person. Everybody, I think, would love him.
But just to be clear, you're comparing him to King David?
The volume is very low.
I'm sorry. You are, just to put it off for the record, you're comparing him to King David, and that worked out well for King David, and that this is another King David, right?
I don't know about him, King, but certainly he has some policies that are very worthwhile. And the other thing, Neil.
There you go. Just an absolutely electric declaration from Ben Carson. You know, even a brain surgeon can tell that this is a cult, or maybe better said, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to tell that this is a cult. This is a political religious cult, or a religio-political cult, or something along those lines. They overtly liken Trump to God or God-like figures, prominent figures from religious texts. And sadly, you know, there was a time where a speech like this, a declaration like that from Ben Carson would get you laughed out of politics. I don't know exactly when. It's been a while now, but there was a time where it would. This is considered normal Republican politics at this point in time. This sort of cult adoration, he's like King David. He's like God. He was sent by God. God chose him. We need to pray for God. Trump will pray for God because God needs Trump's help, as we weirdly heard Trump say at a pre-Iowa caucus event. This is overtly a cult now. It needs to be dealt with as such. And so one of the things we've done on the show is we've interviewed experts on cults and cult psychology. It's not ad hominem. It's practical. How do you get people out of a cult? There are experts in this, mental health experts, sociologists, psychologists, who study when people are in a cult, how do you get them out? Every time it comes up, there are those who see it as an insult to these MAGA people. It's not an insult. We genuinely need to figure out how do we get them out of the cult. Sometimes it takes the cult leader going away, and whether that's prison or whatever, I don't know. But sometimes the cult leader being taken to prison only reinvigorates support for them. So it is a cult, and we're working on figuring out how to get these people out of it. Mike Pillow, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, says that Fox News has canceled him. Here he is telling this to Steve Bannon, but there is more to the story. Listen to this.
I'm glad you're bringing disturbing news. It's been such a sunshiny show this morning. Hit me, brother. Let's get it all. Come on. Well, we got big shoulders here in the war room. We can take it. What do you got?
Well, as you know, Steve, ever since I've been speaking out about our election platform since January of 21, they've been attacking my company, MyPillow, with cancel culture, the box stores, the shopping channels, and now Fox News. Fox News has canceled MyPillow, and I don't have the reasons why yet. I can only you know, say, well, but the caucuses are coming on Monday. They know my brand is branded right with our great real president, Donald Trump. You know, maybe it's because I brought Lou Dobbs over to my Lindell TV network this week. And
it doesn't seem that any of those are the reasons. It appears that the reason Fox News canceled MyPillow is this Axios report that Mike Lindell hasn't paid his advertising bill to Fox News since August of last year, reportedly owing Fox News $7.8 million. Pillow says Fox News canceled me for political reasons. Axios reports they canceled him because he owes him nearly $8 million. Pillow responding to this, apparently while driving, saying, no, that report about me owing Fox isn't true.
Paper's a deadbeat and refused to pay your bills.
Well, it has nothing to do with the paying bills, Steve. And I actually am reaching out to Susan Scott, the CEO of Fox. I'll be reaching out to her today to find out what this is all about. I'm getting reports from my media buyers that they were offered money on Wednesday to actually test one of our new ads. And that's when we found out we were shut down. And so it had nothing to do with money. We're well within our credit limits there. And so, we like I said before, I believe it's because we brought Lou Dobbs over to Lindell TV. And
yeah, there really isn't evidence for that. MyPillow, Mike Lindell, says that it is not because he stopped paying Fox News. What is the truth? With Pillow, you never know. I don't know if you noticed, but he slipped in there that he supports our real president, Donald Trump. Really couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And as I've said before, this entire getting involved with politics thing has been the worst thing for the MyPillow brand. Mike Pillow personally is very wealthy, but those 1,500 employees of his, it's a different story. And anecdotally, we know that many of them are not thrilled with this holy war that he seems to be waging in the political space. We will follow what happens to MyPillow. We've got a great bonus show for you today. I will be joined by producer Pat. We will talk about strange reactions to MLK Day yesterday, AI's influence on jobs, and so many more things. Sign up at joinpacman.com to There is a new report out with allegations from a top European Union official that Donald Trump at one point vowed never to help Europe if Europe were attacked. And I, in being super honest, after the way Trump dealt with Putin in Helsinki, this doesn't come as the biggest surprise, but it is news nonetheless. This is a report from Politico. Trump vowed he'd never help Europe if it's attacked, top EU official says. By the way, NATO is dead, the former and potential future U.S. president added. This is from an alleged private meeting. What does it say? One of Europe's most senior politicians recounted how former U.S. President Donald Trump privately warned that America would not come to the EU's aid if it was attacked militarily. Trump told European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in 2020, this is according to the French European Commissioner Thierry Breton, who was present at the meeting at the World Economic Forum in Davos, quote, you need to understand that if Europe is under attack, we will never come to help you and to support you. By the way, NATO is dead and we will leave. We will quit NATO. And he added, and by the way, you owe me $400 billion because you didn't pay, you Germans, what you had to pay for defense. It was described as a tense meeting at which the EU's then trade chief, Phil Hogan, was present. This anecdote was recounted at an event in European Parliament in Brussels on Tuesday. So let's talk about a few of the different elements here. First of all, if I'm super honest with you, when Trump and Putin did that kind of press, that public event in Helsinki, and Trump just sucked up to Putin and said, listen, I asked Putin, did you hack in the 2016 election? And Putin denied it very strongly. And I believe him. It was very clear at that point that there were questions as to Trump's commitment to our NATO responsibilities, to Trump's commitment to defense of Europe and all of it. Now, I want to go a little bit further because there's the question that is a legitimate question, which is, should the U.S. come to Europe's defense? Why is it the default that the U.S. come to Europe's defense? There is no rule that says the United States must be allied with Europe, mostly Western Europe. There's no rule that says the United States has to come to the defense unless there is such an agreement in place that says that. And this is really the problem with people like Trump. We saw this with the Iran nuclear deal where Trump was just like, I'm out. I just don't like it. Iran hadn't violated it, but Trump just said, I don't like it. I'm getting out. And there are other examples of the same sort of thing. In order to be taken seriously, we're only as good as our word. And if we become the sort of country where there is a year of negotiation under one president and an agreement is signed, and then the next president just goes, I don't like it, I'm out. That's the Iran deal. That makes us look bad. When it is something as significant as NATO and shared defense of our European allies, you can argue it's not in American interests to come to the defense of Western Europe. I'm not making that argument. I'm just saying one could argue that. And then you could say there should be a renegotiation of the shared defense commitments. Maybe NATO is dead in the sense that the U.S. should or could get out. You can do those things, and they need to be done diplomatically and correctly.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Hard as it may seem, given that the war on terror has stretched for over 20 years, but this might be the most dangerous moment I've ever observed in the Middle East. Whether it's the United States or Iran and each of their various allies, the escalatory pressures of the current war emerging from Israel's devastation of Gaza are tremendous.
From Iraq to Lebanon to Pakistan to the Red Sea, can Israel's war on Gaza escalate into a full-blown regional conflict? We'll speak with award-winning journalist Spencer Ackerman. But first, Gaza's the deadliest place for journalists on record.
More journalists have been killed in Israel's assault on Gaza, nearly all of them Palestinian, than have ever been killed in a single country over an entire year. Many of those journalists who are still alive have lost their family members, have lost their homes. So this really is a war on journalists in Gaza.
We'll speak with independent journalist Sharif Abdelkaddous and Sharif Mansour with the Committee to Protect Journalists. We'll take an in-depth look at a new investigation into the killing of an Al Jazeera cameraman last month. And what do Israelis see on TV? How has Israeli media's coverage shaped opinions of the war? We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with Haaretz journalist Gideon Levy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pakistan has condemned Iran for violating its airspace and killing two children in air attacks less than a day after Iranian attacks in Iraqi Kurdistan killed at least four people. Iranian media said two bases of the Jaish al-Adl militants in Balochistan were destroyed late Tuesday, though there has been no official confirmation from Tehran of its responsibility. Pakistan recalled its ambassador from Iran and said the Iranian ambassador to Pakistan would be barred from returning. This comes amidst escalating tensions that are spreading throughout the Middle East. The U.S. carried out its third strike against Yemen's Houthi forces Tuesday. The White House also announced it's redesignating the Houthi militia as a terrorist group and reimposing penalties on the Iran-backed group in retaliation for their attacks in the Red Sea, which have led to no casualties but have disrupted global trade. The group's vowed to continue its campaign in the Red Sea as long as Israel continues to attack Gaza. On Tuesday, a Greek vessel headed to Israel was hit by a Houthi missile. We'll have more on the possibility of a wider conflict later in the broadcast. In Gaza, displaced civilians are again fleeing as intense Israeli bombardment rains down on Khan Yunis, including the area around its main hospital, Al-Nasser. Israeli ground forces have also been reported in the area. Overnight, Palestinian journalist Bissan Alda was able to post a video from the hospital despite a five-day-long communications blackout. Bissan Alda said she feared it could be her final update.
The medical staff, the ambulances, many people also evacuated the hospital, and that's so dangerous. This is the last functioning hospital in Gaza. That means that thousands of injuries are still now alone in the hospital. Displaced people are alone in the hospital. They are besieged. We are besieged. I don't know if I can survive this or go anywhere. I'm just alone. Alone as thousands. Alone as many in other hospitals were before.
Bissan Alda did survive the night and called on her followers to observe a global strike against the war next week. Qatar and France have brokered a deal for medicine to enter Gaza for the remaining Israeli hostages in exchange for aid for Palestinians. This comes amidst a worsening humanitarian catastrophe as a UN rights expert asserted, quote, every single person in Gaza is hungry.